Hello, welcome to 1 in 5. I'm Katie Gossett, and today I'm taking a stroll in central Christchurch. I have a sunny day for it, and as you can doubtless hear, there are ever-present sounds of construction as the city is being rebuilt. Much has been made of the potential for the new Christchurch to become truly accessible. After all, how often do cities get the chance to start, if not completely from scratch, then something close to it? But in the aftermath of the earthquakes, and with the rebuild underway, there are questions being asked about how much consideration has been given to community members who are living with a disability. Hello, John.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm Katie. Nice to meet you.
Good timing. Yeah, Marie's just pulled up.
Oh, great.
So everything worked out really well because Marie, you know, needs a really good park. So that worked a treat.
With me today is Johnny Burke, and he's been pondering these questions for some time as part of a doctorate thesis at the University of Canterbury. He's looking at the post-earthquake experiences of people who use wheelchairs. And joining us today is one of his research participants, Marie. Given that part of the research looks at community inclusion, we're currently cruising the Restart Mall in search of a coffee.
Oh wow, the tram's coming through here now.
Haven't seen it for a while, have we, the old tram?
No, not for ages. Pretty sure there's a place so we go right up and into the right. Well, I know there's another cafe in the Restart Mall just over there. Are you right to push over there, Marie? Quite handy here actually, with everything being so flat, it makes getting around in a wheelchair a lot easier.
Yeah, so this is better than a lot of places?
Yeah, definitely.
Johnny and Marie are both using wheelchairs to navigate the mall, but Johnny uses a power chair while Marie's is a manual, and that means they have slightly different needs.
See this paving here, which is what the whole city mall used to be part of. I'd never thought about it before, but now to get over this, it's really quite difficult. It's very juddery.
The front wheel's shaking with the effort.
Yeah. So it's very uncomfortable. And then you get to a spot where you've got the pieces missing. Very easy for the chair to stop.
Do you want a coffee, Marie?
Three single shot lattes.
Ensconced in the Restart Mall with a coffee, Johnny explains his PhD, which grew out of a lack of data about the experiences of the disability community following the earthquakes.
It quickly became clear that there's a lot of literature around disabled people and people who use wheelchairs in the initial aftermath of natural disasters, but not a lot of research looking at the kind of long-term impact as cities and communities recover. And because it was 3 years post-earthquake, it just seemed like a really good opportunity to actually look at how one section of the disabled community, people who use wheelchairs, how they were getting on.
He says that within that general topic, he's preparing a survey, and the questions asked will be guided by what wheelchair users themselves think is important.
So the first phase of the study, I've interviewed 13 people about their notion of community, how valuable they find community inclusion, what the individual and social determinants of that community inclusion are, and whether or not they're experiencing it in the 3 to 4 years post-earthquake, and if they are, why, and if they are not, what those reasons are as well.
He says halfway through the research, patterns and themes are already beginning to emerge.
The first one was quite an interesting one. I've kind of tentatively named it Community Inclusion Takes Energy, especially when you use a wheelchair. Because a lot of the stuff coming through in the interviews was just how exhausting and how much planning and time can go into just doing what most people would consider to be quite run-of-the-mill activities, such as finding a park or just accessing a hairdresser's or, you know, meeting friends for a coffee. So before the earthquake, people who use wheelchairs already had this certain level of energy expenditure. And what we found after the earthquake is that there's been a new variety of barriers that have come about that have kind of increased those energy needs, such as disruption to footpaths and roads and lots of road cones and obstacles for people to negotiate. But also some wider issues as well, such as it's much more difficult for people to find accessible housing, whether that's buying houses or renting houses. And also a lot of social networks and carers have moved away because of the earthquake. It's kind of added to the barriers that existed before the earthquake.
So just talking about those access issues, so we've met you, Marie, down the road there where the beginning of the pedestrian mall meets Colombo Street, and you found it difficult generally to get a park around here?
It is difficult in the city to get a park, and then it's difficult once you've got the park to actually access the city because there are footpaths and curbs and just areas that you can't easily get across, particularly in a manual wheelchair. So without someone with me, just assisting and making sure that you can actually get over that, otherwise you've got traffic coming from different directions all the time and you know, the whole anxiety thing builds up. Pre-earthquake, they used to have a lot of pavers, and they're very jarring and very up and down. You can't really get across them. Although I didn't have to worry about that pre-earthquake because it's only post-earthquake that I've needed the wheelchair. So suddenly, as a new user, I suddenly see lots of areas that could be improved easily, but there just doesn't seem to be much thought as to how people need to access public areas.
And so, tapping into what Johnny's just been talking about, this idea of community and the energy needed to be expended, how did you find that?
When someone invites me somewhere to join in a community event or just to meet with friends, I don't think about do I want to go, I think about can I go, can I get there, can I park, can I get out of my car? And post-earthquake there's a lot more barriers to that, just in terms of footpaths not available, holes in footpaths, obstacles in the way.
Have you found any particularly near where you live, for example? I mean, are there ways that it has precluded just, you know, wandering in your nearby neighbourhood?
I tend not to do that without someone with me because, for those reasons, in a manual wheelchair could tend to get stuck.
What about the centre of the city?
The other parts of the city I've just stayed away from completely. There was just too much disruption and parking is almost impossible anywhere except for close to this area.
A lot of participants said that, especially participants who use manual wheelchairs, they just avoided the central city and would go to the malls, not because they preferred the malls, just because it was easier.
I think if people could plan in advance, so it seems to me that it's an afterthought often. Suddenly they think we might have to make room for people, you know, in wheelchairs or disabled people, and then it's done after the event, so rather than forward planning. And I don't know how you encourage them to do that.
I think consultation's really, really important. Making the most of the time as well, because before we know it, as we can see around us, all the buildings are being built, and if they're not being built to a really nice accessible standard, this opportunity is kind of lost and went back to square one. So I know there's a lot of good initiatives like the Earthquake Disability Leadership Group, the council's doing a lot of consultation too, but yeah, it's just a really big opportunity that we really need to take advantage of.
And he says in some ways his research may offer an insight into what's needed.
I think the reason a lot of people don't have an awareness of people who use wheelchairs and their needs is often not because they don't want to, it's just sort of a general ignorance, really. And, you know, as me and Marie both know, before we had to use wheelchairs, we didn't know a lot about it. And there is quite an irony that was brought up in a lot of my interviews with participants that when you have an inaccessible environment, people who use wheelchairs can't access them because they're inaccessible. So often people say, well, there's no one around here using wheelchairs who needs to use this environment, so why should we have to put in a disability accessible toilet or a lift or something? But of course, if you make an environment accessible, of course people will then access it.
Yes, and then suddenly they'll be surprised and amazed by the diversity of their community.
Exactly, it's kind of a chicken or egg thing, really. As Marie said, if an environment is not accessible, you just don't go there if there's too much energy or too much stress involved.
You just start thinking, do I want to spend that energy going to that place with those people? Sometimes you don't, or you can't.
So, from your perspective here in Christchurch, what is accessible?
The Restart Mall, I think, is reasonably accessible. if you can get in here. So once you're actually here, as you can see, it's quite good. Merivale Moor is another area that's very accessible. The Horncastle Arena is accessible. It's got good parking. Nothing like the Town Hall in terms of acoustics and enjoyment, but it is very accessible.
Yeah, well, I just noticed, even as we're driving in here today, you know, there's lots of pop-up cafes around Christchurch. Two of them actually had ramps going up to them, you know, which is really great to see, especially for a temporary structure. Another thing that came through in the research, and you might be able to expand on this a bit, Marie, is just how being included and having access to the community is really linked to one's well-being. Like, it's not just about being able to get into a shop or get into somewhere, but it's really connected to your sense of well-being. For example, if you can go somewhere with your family, you know, you just feel better. Whereas if you have to stay outside of a shop or outside of a building while your family goes into the building, it doesn't feel that great. So I think it's not just about enabling people to get places and move in between places. It's about really, making people feel empowered, to use that word, and have a good sense of well-being. And it can also reinforce those feelings of difference that can sometimes come about when you do use a wheelchair. If there's no barriers and you can get into shops and places and parks, it reduces that feeling of difference. The wheelchair becomes somewhat inconspicuous, which is a great thing when you use a wheelchair.
I totally agree with that. And just thinking about other places, hospitals and various medical rooms, I was quite surprised to find that medical rooms had been designed so that in a wheelchair you couldn't get in. So you couldn't get in by yourself. This is perhaps my standard, as if I can go anywhere by myself, then it gets a tick. If I can't go by myself, then it fails. So here we have medical centres where you can't actually gain access by yourself because there's a hill or a rise or a big heavy door to lift, so you have to have someone with you to open those doors. It just doesn't make sense.
Coming back to that sense of community involvement and the resulting well-being. So, you know, here we are, we're sitting in the middle of the Restart Mall, and it's a great day and we're having a coffee. So this is great stuff for being in amongst the community. How often would the two of you do something like this, you know, without your existing support networks?
You want to do it as much as you can. It often depends on whether you can get into a place. In my case, I need someone to drive my van, so I think if the option's there and it's an easy option, you're definitely inclined to do it a lot more than if it's not, because if that spontaneity is taken away, then it becomes really hard. Because if you just want to go and have a coffee and not make a big deal about it, but you have to spend hours planning it and thinking about it, you're probably less inclined to do it. Whereas if you can, you know, make the decision, right, let's go and have a coffee now, and there's less and less barriers in the way, you're more inclined to do it.
So if we can quantify it, how often would you do this? Weekly? Monthly?
Yeah, no, probably two or three times a week.
Yep. Yep.
If I'm meeting people, it's usually over a coffee.
That explains why you're drinking single shots then. You're having so many.
Exactly. I need to sleep at night, so I can't be drinking too many.
Marie is also drinking single shots and enjoys a coffee as much as anyone, but she finds her sorties into the city are a bit more limited.
Maybe once a month, but with people with me, so I would not come in on my own. It just feels too vulnerable.
For example, I exit my van through the back of the van, so I don't need any extra room on the side of the car parks, whereas Marie exits her car through the driver's door and has the wheelchair come around the side, so she needs two metres at least. Yeah, so it's a lot of different needs like that as well.
Another problem can be a shortage of curb cuts. These are those flattened bits of surface that allow wheelchair users to get off a footpath and down onto a road. And if there aren't enough, people might end up going miles out of their way. Johnny and Marie say it's important that planners look at the big picture, ensuring that every step of a journey is accessible.
Because you don't just want to be able to get out of your car, get up onto the curb, get into a building, but then not get to the second floor of the building. It's like you're halfway there. So you want to be able to get everywhere.
Does it happen a lot that you end up halfway somewhere and despite having put a whole lot of thought and planning into your journey, suddenly there'll be something that makes you think, ah, I need to rethink it?
Yeah, I encounter that a fair bit. Just because I use a power chair, so I can't get up any form of step. I need level access everywhere I go. So sometimes you'll be going down a path and you'll get to the end and there's no curb cut. Or you'll get into a building and there's a couple of steps onto the next kind of level or something like that. So you almost have a default position of being prepared for the worst, but perhaps hoping for the best.
What do you do in those situations? What have you done when you've got somewhere and discovered a step? And
well, you usually just have to turn around or go back. Yeah, and just look for an alternative entry. Or that's the thing at the moment. Sometimes you have to access buildings from the side or go around the back, which is never a great feeling, you know, because then it makes you feel quite conspicuous and just creates more stress, and you just want things to be kind of smooth and easy. And the fact that they realistically could be means it's quite a realistic expectation. I don't think it's expecting too much at all, especially when we have the New Zealand Disability Strategy and policy and all this kind of argument for it. I think it could be realised as well in the real world.
You've both mentioned that you have had periods where you haven't been in wheelchairs and now you are. So have you personally gained some insights or do you have some particular perspectives about maybe the way you used to feel about things and the way you feel now? Or
before I used a wheelchair, it's not something that I thought about at all. But obviously now I do, because it's such a huge part of my life. And I think that's probably the case for a lot of people who don't have any personal experience of a friend or a family member using a wheelchair. They have no real reason to think about it. So that's why it's important that you know, there's consultation with people who use wheelchairs and acknowledgement that they are a large part of our society, as well as other disabled people also.
It's somewhat a feeling of discrimination when you want to go somewhere and you can't go somewhere, when you can't do what all those things I could do before, I can't now do them because of maybe access or being able to get into a particular building, and it just feels, it does feel a degree of discrimination.
At this point, we head off for a meander through the mall, but it's not an effortless affair. The Central City Development Unit has released a plan for transport entitled An Accessible City. And the plan notes that during the consultation period, there was strong support for a barrier-free environment for people with disabilities. Johnny says he hopes his research may ultimately contribute to policy. But in the meantime, wheelchair travel can still be challenging. So, Johnny, there's a little trough here, I note.
Yeah, see, things like this are fine for me using a power chair. Then when you use a manual chair, they're a little bit harder because the front wheels on the manual chair are really small.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take much for that to get jammed. I mean, it could even take a small stone or a lip.
Mine got caught in a hole in the footpath one day and I came out of the chair. So that was anything that stops you suddenly,
yeah,
you just keep going. But the chair stopped, so that's it. You're part company.
Yeah, when you use a wheelchair and you're like paralysed, obviously you don't have that muscle strength to hold you in a chair sometimes, and if that paralysis is kind of in your torso, any kind of momentum will just throw you out of the chair. And of course there's people use wheelchairs for all sorts of different reasons, so some people are stronger in the chair, some people might not have the balance as well.
How did you find this little trough here?
That was fine because I just slowly came up to it. If I'd come up at any speed, that could have been a problem. So, yeah, slow right down and just go through it.
Right, so Marie, these are obviously mildly annoying, these...
Yes, they are.
What would we call these? Sort of a concrete tile.
Yeah.
See, this footpath's quite good because it doesn't have a lot of camber. When a footpath's got a lot of camber, especially manual wheelchairs, they'll follow the downhill. So if there's a lot of camber and someone doesn't have a lot of strength, they can actually veer towards the edge of the footpath quite quickly.
And that must be quite a frightening feeling.
Yeah, especially when there's traffic around and cars and things like that.
It's pushing you in one direction all the time, so it becomes very tiring to keep going.
So sometimes it's exhausting, physically pushing around in a wheelchair, as well as that kind of mental exhaustion of planning where you could go and deciding on what you could do and things like that.
The tram tracks would bother.
Trying to get over those can be very difficult.
Yes, of course. We commented on it before as we saw it coming through the mall. I suppose nice to see it nostalgically, but not...
Yes, not practical. But it also, just if you see these rough pavers down here, just trying to get over those.
See, that's really good over there. There's a ramp there on that temporary structure, which is great to see, because that cash machine's only up about 2 foot. But if you used a wheelchair, you wouldn't even be able to use that. Unless there was that ramp there, so it's really encouraging when you see things like that.
Perhaps you should test it out.
Oh, actually, that's to get into the building. I'm not sure if a wheelchair user might be able to access that cash machine.
Should we give it a go?
Yeah.
So just to be clear, this is a bank we're approaching. We won't identify them by name, but...
Yep. See, I don't use cash machines because my arms are paralysed too, but someone like Marie would probably use a cash machine.
So already, yeah, you can see the light from down here. You can't actually see very easily what's happening up there.
It's a very strong glare, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to read it from that angle.
No, just try. It'd be interesting.
Can you read it?
Not the thing. Now I don't know how to get my card back. So if we press...
cancel, maybe.
Cancel.
Can you see the cancel?
Well, there's a cancel here.
Nice try, no luck.
Right, so that business has lost your custom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and a lot of participants talked about that sort of stuff. You know, they said it can even impact their food choices. If they driving down the road and they want to buy from a certain shop, but they can't find a park outside, that shop has lost their custom, and they might have to make a food choice that they don't really want to make. Because they might just have to access somewhere that's more accessible, but not actually the desired shop that they wanted to buy something from.
And that feeds into what you were saying about general well-being as well, doesn't it? It's about whether you can make choices and have those choices met, as it were, you know, on any level, including what you feel like eating that night.
Yeah, and it's just that spontaneity as well. And, you know, with some changes to things in the community, that spontaneity can be realised, I think, as well.
As we've been talking, we've arrived at Marie's car.
Well, even your car park here, the closest curb cut is probably, I don't know, 10 metres, 8 metres away. And so she would have to get out of her car into the stream of traffic there. So things like that are quite stressful. And, just add that little extra spice to life.
Yeah, when you think about it, of course, you have to pretty much pull over and drive up into the stream of traffic.
Yes.
And face the cars head on.
And then if you think about wanting to be a good citizen and paying for your car parking, I would have to get out of the car, come round, wheel myself down there, which is a horrible camber down that kind of footpath, get my parking ticket, come all the way back, go over that curb, open my door, get in my car because I can't reach to put the ticket in, get out of the car, back into the wheelchair, this is with the traffic coming, and leave again. So, and if there's a good gust of an easterly wind, then the ticket that I've just put in will disappear anyway.
Yep.
So that's another issue that is really, really difficult.
You're just going to pull over for a coffee or to pick up something quickly, you'd probably be less inclined to do that.
It's not that I don't want to pay for parking, it's just too difficult.
So you do not pay on occasion because of that?
On occasion. Too much energy required.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in, Marie.
That's all right, Johnny.
After farewelling Marie, we watch as she first waits for the traffic to stop and then has to pull out into the road to wheel back towards her car. She gets into the vehicle, then opens her boot remotely, and a mechanised arm emerges and extends up to the driver's door, enabling Marie to attach her wheelchair. It's then pulled back into the boot. In the meantime, traffic has started up again and is flowing past her. I record the whole process, which takes just over 3 minutes.
Okay. Ready to roll.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
It is an amazing device.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Nice to see you.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Well, that's the program for today, and it's time for me to wander off too. I do so with the sounds of rebuilding still happening around me, a reminder of the rare chance Christchurch has to reinvent itself as a truly accessible city. And in the coming months, we'll be looking at this issue again and touching base with local authorities as the rebuild progresses. We'll be back at the same time next week with more on disability issues. In the meantime, have a great week.